National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
How can the Catholic Church accompany men and women who are attracted to the same sex? A couple of recent books attempt to answer that question. Register Radio this week takes a look at the Church's teaching on homosexuality. We examine the ambiguities in some so-called gay ministries, and we listen to the story of how one courageous Catholic, who happens to be same-sex attracted, is sharing the message of God's love and his plan for sexuality to young people. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio, and I'm joined by my co-host Matthew Bunsen, a senior contributor to our pages. Matthew, we have a complex show today.
We do. Homosexuality is, of course, a very sensitive topic, especially in today's culture, one on which the Church's teachings place us at great odds with the predominant culture.
That's right. And not only with the culture, but even within the Church sometimes there's confusion on this topic. A Pew Research Center study shows that Catholics aged 18 to 29, of those Catholics, 85% believe that homosexuality should be accepted by society. That's a very large number, and almost as many approve of same-sex marriage. I really think the Church has an uphill battle to catechize her own on the truth about God's plan for men and women who are same-sex attracted. Daniel Mattson, an author of a new book and a recent Register blogger, will share his story about same-sex attraction later in the show. He has a wonderful story of evangelization that is going on in his life right now, using his former way of life to actually teach people about God's truth about sexuality. But right now, we welcome Judy Roberts, a longtime Register writer, to the show. We're going to talk about her recent interview with Jesuit Father James Martin and his take on how to minister to the so-called LGBT community. Judy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Judy, as I said, you are a veteran Register writer. How long has it been?
So I had to go back and check. It's been since July of 2000. That was my first story.
17 years. Wow.
Wow. Frightening.
That is. That's great. How did you first become involved in Catholic journalism, Judy?
Through the Register.
Really?
I was writing for a secular, a mid-sized daily secular paper as a religion editor.
Yeah.
And the Register came across our desk. And I liked it. I was kind of experiencing a renewal of my own Catholic faith and rediscovery of it maybe at the time. And so I was liking what I was reading in the Register. And I came across a story in our community that I knew my paper would not be interested in because mm-hmm. we were editorially pro-choice. And it was a pro-life story. And I called the Register on a Friday, of all things, and Tom Hoops answered the phone, and I told him about the story. He said, yeah, we'd be interested in that. Why don't you send it to us?
That's great. So you reached out to my predecessor.
I did.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I've been writing for you ever since, pretty much, with maybe a few breaks here and there.
Yeah, that's great. And, and you know, your experience writing for us over 17 years or so has really gained you a lot of trust by us editors. Of course, I've only been here 5 years, but I know that every time we have a very sensitive topic, we often say, I wonder if Judy would take that up. And many times you actually do. And of course, that's not the only thing. Sensitive things aren't the only thing you write about. But really, recently, in this last year, you've done some writing on the topic of homosexuality, because we asked you to. It was, you know, something we thought needed to be addressed, and there was a series of articles about the Church's teaching on homosexuality, which isn't always accepted. And in fact, you know, we were mentioning those statistics in the introduction. There are a lot of people who just can't grasp the Church's teaching on this, or really don't know them. And so that's why we thought we would explore this topic. So you wrote a couple of stories in the spring that talk about the Church's teaching. We'll get into those in a little while. But really, your latest story was about Father James Martin's book called Building Bridges, How the Catholic Church and the LGBT Community Can Enter into a Relationship of Respect, Compassion, and Sensitivity. That's the title of his book. And the book has gotten some criticism. What is the book about, and why is it so controversial?
Well, I'm not sure if it's the book that's controversial or if it's the author, but in some of the things that he has said since then. But when I first read the book, it struck me as fairly bland. Father wants the church's cardinals, archbishops, and bishops just to listen to the stories of Catholics who experience same-sex attraction, and then he wants the LGBT community to show respect for the hierarchy, and then he wants the two to come together and meet in the middle of a bridge as members of the one church. I mean, that sounds lovely,
right?
And he says he advocates no change in church teaching. But since the book has come out, he has been criticized for not really stating what the church teaches on the subject, apart from saying that we should accept those with homosexual tendencies with respect, compassion, and sensitivity. That is in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. And then he does depart from some of the church documents on ministry to people who are considered, who have homosexual tendencies, by saying we should call them LGBT or gay, and not those who experience same-sex attraction, which is what the church recommends.
That's right, and it's interesting because we've heard from several people in the article that you wrote about critiques of Father Martin's point of view of the proposal that he makes, and I don't know that there have been that many critiques on the idea of building a bridge and opening this dialogue and listening, but some critiques have come in how he proposes to do that, or it with the idea of whether or not those who experience same-sex attraction really want to respect the hierarchy, or really want to, particularly, I think, respect the hierarchy's teaching authority. I mean, it's one thing to respect a person, right? We should always respect each other, and we should speak with each other respectfully. But the hierarchy has a teaching authority, and what they teach, we as Catholics believe is true when they speak about dogma and doctrine. And can those who Father Martin are trying to encourage really accept that teaching authority seems to be a real question in my mind.
And he even has said since then, even though he said he's not wanting to change that teaching, he did mention in the interview he did with Religion News Service that perhaps we need to change some of the language in the catechism. Mm-hmm. He talked about rather than objectively disordered, we could say differently ordered. But then, as Father Gerald Murray has pointed out, that would constitute a change in church teaching.
Right.
Again, I think it's some of the ambiguity and the lack of clarity that is bringing him some criticism right now, because he's just saying, we need to treat these people better, we need to talk to them, we need to make them feel accepted and welcomed. But many of the people that I have interviewed for these other stories have said, you can't do that. You can't do ministry to people with same-sex attraction unless you give them the truth. That's what they most need. They need to hear that, even if it's uncomfortable. And there's certainly a loving way to do it.
Yes, there's one author, Eve Tushnet, who has written a book. I think it was called Gay and Catholic. And she wrote, in the Washington Post that reviewed the book, and she said, he says a lot of good things about how the church could do more to reach people who are having this experience. But she has a very poignant criticism, and that is that he never actually articulates the church's teaching on what she calls sexual ethic, and what we would say is just the God's plan for sexuality. I mean, that's what the church is teaching on homosexuality is about. It's about God's plan for homosexuality, right? And he never really even goes into that. Why didn't he? You spoke to him about this.
He said in the interview that we have online with him that he thinks that really every gay Catholic knows that teaching, and there's really no need to bring it up. It's there, it's understood, and he also doesn't think that anybody expects it to be changed. But he didn't feel the need to bring it up. He said, we know the teaching, we know the teaching on chastity, and there was really no reason to deal with it in the book.
Well, Judy, it's interesting because you also asked him in the interview about specific homosexual acts and as a barometer for how we have our conversation. And I noticed in the interview he went immediately to a kind of equivalency regarding business leaders and some of the decisions that they make. So we're talking instead here about prudential judgments about business, and yet he's skirting completely the issue of clarity. And it always does seem to come down to a lack of clarity and a formal restating of what is not particularly difficult. It's very clearly stated in the Catechism what the Church actually believes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think he's just saying it's out there, and we don't need to make it any more clear than it already is. People know what it is, and he thinks that the gay community is so wounded and has been so wounded by the Church that is the thing that needs to be worked on at this point. And I did ask him, well, how long do you stay in compassion and respect mm-hmm. and sensitivity mm-hmm. before you convey the Church teaching? And if you notice, he really doesn't quite answer that.
Right. Well, what are the risks then for the average person who's reading a book like Building Bridges, where you have an approach that is very clearly in favor with the media, and we can jump back to that Pew Research Center study that these numbers are almost unreal, 85%, 75% approval of same-sex marriage, but all of that has happened just within about the last 12 years.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying what is the average Catholic going to think when he or she reads this book?
Right, who may not be well catechized.
Yeah, exactly. Probably nothing. They probably is really all this book is about being kind and talking about how much the LGBT community has suffered, and then the rest of it is really a lot of kind of meditations and. He quotes from Psalm 139, and he has a prayer at the end, and these are prayers that he's offering to those who are in the gay community and their families, and saying that, you know, these are things I'm offering you to help you. And people really love him, and they love his approach, and they love the kind of writing that he's done in other books, and I think this is just kind of more of the same. As he said, I don't usually write about homosexuality, I write about Jesus and prayer, mm-hmm. and that's what I, you know, talk about in retreats and things. But I think I think he does feel very strongly that this community has been wounded, and he wants to reach out to them. And that I said, "What is your end game?" And he said, "I don't have it. The only end game is to bring them together."
Right. You know, Judy, we're going to keep going because I want to get to some of the other questions, and we can always put the whole interview online. And so I'm just going to ask a few more questions. So, you know, you mentioned Father Jerry Murray. He did write a piece at the Register in response to Father's book. It's a book review, and it was pretty tough. The title of the book is that Father James, of the review is Father James Martin Proposes an Alternate Catechism. And Father Murray seems to believe that Father Martin is really asking for a change in teaching, though he's not using those words and he's denying that he's doing so. And he, because of exactly what you said, that it's a, you know, he's calling for a change in the way we speak about homosexuality. And of course, the Church teaches that the homosexual orientation or the inclination is a disordered inclination. They're not teaching that homosexuals are disordered. They're teaching the inclination to same-sex attraction or same-sex acts is disordered. And of course, the acts themselves are disordered. But Father Martin's calling for a change in all of that. but there is a ministry that really tries to reach out to Catholics who are experiencing same-sex attraction with the truth of what the Church teaches. That's called Courage. And Father Martin doesn't talk at all about courage in the book. And he doesn't really even talk about Catholics who are experiencing same-sex attraction but are living chastely and don't call themselves gay. And so you talked to some of these people because you wrote a few other stories about these Catholics. And one of your stories was called How to Accompany Catholics Who Are Same-Sex Attracted. Who were these Catholics that you spoke to, and how did they come to understand themselves in the light of the Church's teaching?
Well, one was Jean Lloyd, who writes for the Witherspoon Institute's public discourse site. And she had been raised as an evangelical Protestant and later converted to Catholicism. So a lot of her understanding of she was struggling with same-sex attraction for many years. She finally came to her understanding of her true identity, not as a lesbian, but as a woman made in the image of God. And she said that was with the help of Christians who were faithful to the truth, mm-hmm. while still walking with her and praying with her and loving her. And she has such a burden now for Catholics who are going to these gay ministries with rainbow flags. And she said she walked into one of those ministries on a college campus one time, and it was a big banner that said, "Come celebrate your true colors." And she said, my heart just broke because those are not my true colors. And mm-hmm. she knows that now. And she doesn't like that we're telling people who have this attraction, same-sex attraction, those are your true colors. They're not. She said your true colors are as a child of God. So she has been very vocal in some of her writing and also in her interview with me about the great need to be clear in ministry with people who have same-sex attraction. Be clear with them about what is right, what is true. She said you can empathize. It's good to empathize with their pain and their struggle, as Father Martin wants us to do. But she said don't apologize for same-sex activity being outside of God's will. She said that doesn't help me.
Right.
That doesn't make me stronger. That makes me weaker. And she said, people like this need to be pulled out of the water. They're drowning. We need to pull them out of the water, help them to walk, stand with them where they're wavering. So and I think that the work what she's talking about is being done by Courage, mm-hmm. Courage International, and that's one of the ministries she now recommends, along with another one called Living Waters, started by Andy Comiskey, who is also a Catholic convert. But another person who talked to me about it was the same message about the need for clarity was David Prosen, who is in The Third Way, the other documentary about the Church's teaching on homosexuality. And David says, I was initially angry when I heard what the truth was.
Mm-hmm.
But once he was able to accept it, he struggled with it, was able to accept it, then he needed to learn how to live chastely, and Courage helped him to do that, gave him the practical and the spiritual support that he needed. So, these ministries are there. They're not going to be as well, it seems like they're as well known as there's one in Chicago, for instance, that is very well known, as officially sanctioned by the diocese, but it sort of functions alongside the Courage chapter in Chicago. So I'm just not sure that people are getting, the information that they need to get to a place that can really help them.
That's true. It's such an important conversation. It's one that doesn't get people's emotions get involved very quickly, and they have trouble listening to what the Church is trying to say. So that's one of the reasons why the Register really tries to cover this, because the Church's teaching and the language that the Church uses is not, as Father Martin says, needlessly hurtful. The words have a meaning, and their meaning is not intended to hurt somebody, but to point to the truth of human sexuality. One of the things Father Martin said was that by not recognizing the same sex or the person as gay is denying them the very way that they love. And I kind of took offense to that, because is our sexuality, is a sexual act or our sexuality the only way that we give and receive love? By no means, is that the deepest part of ourselves, or the way we give and receive love. And so there's a lot here to unpack. We can't do it all in this show. But Judy, I thank you for being with us to talk about this on the show, but most importantly for covering it in our pages. I really appreciate it. It's not easy, and I'm very grateful.
And I'm grateful to the Register for being willing to write about this. You know, really, not every Catholic publication takes on a subject like this, and so I think it's the Register's to be commended for doing that.
Well, thank you, Judy.
So thank you for the opportunity.
Of course, of course. So for more on this topic and to take a look at Judy's stories, please go to ncregister.com. Her stories are titled Treating the Uneven Terrain of Gay Ministry in the Church. Another is How to Accompany Catholics with Same-Sex Attraction. And finally, the one on Father Martin, which is Father Martin's LGBT Approach Sparks Concern. After our break, we talk to writer Daniel Mattson about how sentimentality can lead young Catholics astray about homosexuality. More when we return.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Jeanette DeMello, the editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. We've been talking about how the church can minister to Catholics who are same-sex attracted. And we've included in that conversation some good ways and perhaps some bad ways that the church can minister. In fact, we asked the question, can some ways of ministering actually be harmful to those who are same-sex attracted? And now to talk to us about his personal experience and also his ministry, we are joined by Daniel Mattson, the author of a new book called Why I Don't Call Myself Gay. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
So your book has an interesting subtitle. It's How I Reclaimed My Sexual Reality and Found Peace. And I wanted to start with that. What are you talking about here?
Well, it's the big question, I think, today that we're confronted with as a church and as a world is how to understand this new and growing realm of sexual identity. If you go to Facebook, there's now over 50 supposedly sexual identities, mm-hmm. different genders. And the question that I really pose in my book is, Are these identities objectively real? Are they true, and do they fit within what we would say the church's anthropology, which is it's understanding of mankind? And for me, wrestling with the fact that I had attractions to men, I was confronted with this question: what kind of man am I? What kind of sexual being am I? Mm-hmm. And for a time, I believed perhaps I was bisexual because I did have some attraction to women. And at a time, there was a time when I had no attractions for women, and I assumed at that point I had bought the idea that my feelings defined me, so I decided that I was gay. But as I really tried to put that on myself, I came to realize that it really was a limiting understanding of the human person. And through a long journey that I outline in the book, I came to the conclusion that really what is only the only thing that is really true about my sexual reality that I can count on and that is true is that I am a man made in the image and likeness of God. And that means that my sexuality is directed towards women, even if I don't necessarily experience that. Hmm. The church in 1986 provided a great ministry to the world, a great gift to the world in the 1986 letter on the pastoral care of the homosexual person, which said, we cannot be reduced to our sexual inclinations or desires. And it says the church today provides a badly needed context when she refuses to consider the person either as a heterosexual or homosexual. So what I argue in the book is that we have caused a lot of confusion by dividing the world between gay and straight rather than male and female. And that's really finding my true identity as a man made in the image and likeness of God has brought me peace.
Yes, that's a wow. That's a mouthful to be unpacked. That's it's a beautiful way that you have described your experience. I'm sure it was a very long I'm sure it was a very long journey. And I know that courage played a part in your journey. If I remember correctly from some of our interviews with you in the past, courage is a ministry that that reaches out to people with same-sex attraction. It's a very special ministry in the church, but it's kind of unique because many other ministries seem to, I guess, celebrate the sexuality, the gay sexuality, or the LGBTQ sexuality. How is it that you? What is wrong? I guess why don't you celebrate that? You don't call yourself, hey, I'm Dan Mattson, a gay Catholic.
Well, sure. Yeah, well, you're exactly right. The Courage Apostolate has been a great gift to me, and it's the only ministry in the church that's been approved by the Vatican to minister to men and women with same-sex attraction. That's not to say that there aren't other good local ministries and that sort of thing. But the question really is, are we thinking with the church or not on the subject of sexuality and sexual identity? The real guidelines to ministry are that 1986 letter that I referenced before, and the United States Bishops Conference produced a wonderful document in 2006, which you can find at their website. I think it's ministry to pastoral ministries to those with a homosexual inclination or same-sex attraction. I can't remember the name. But the question is, are we going to be guided by the church's wisdom? Do we trust what Pope Paul VI said, that the church is expert in humanity or not? And one of the things that the 1986 letter talked about is it said that there is beginning to be this view in the world that homosexuality is maybe just neutral,
right,
or in some ways good.
Right.
Well, I look at like my homosexuality and view it as a privation of a good. And what is that? It's a form of suffering. I don't experience, because of the fall of Adam and my own particular choices and sins, I don't experience on the subjective level my true sexual orientation. So that's a form of suffering. That's a privation of a good. And we never consider a privation of a good in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so people will say, for example, there's just so many wonderful gifts that, quote-unquote, gay people bring to the church, and they'll use an example of it. Well, there's so many, music ministers are quote-unquote, gay. Well, I'm a professional musician, and I am no better an orchestra trombone player because I happen to find men sexually attractive.
Right.
I have success in music because I was given that gift by God. Well, St. James says, every good and perfect gift comes down from the Father above. There aren't unique and special gifts that are unique to me because I happen to be sexually attracted to men. It really doesn't make any sense. So the question is, where is the source of what is good in me? Well, that comes from God the Father because I'm made in His image. And especially in the artistic arena, you can look at the Old Testament and God says, about people who were working on the temple, God gave them a creative heart, the skills to do the skills that they needed to do to build the temple. So that doesn't come from someone's sexuality. It comes from being made in the image and likeness of God, who is the creator of the world. So there's this desire to attribute to being gay, quote-unquote, some really good gifts that
right.
exist in the person. But that really isn't the case, and I find that really confuses the issue.
Well, you brought up in a column, a blog that you did for the Register, some really devastating statistics about what Catholics believe on homosexuality, that so many of them just accept our culture's view of homosexuality. They support same-sex marriage. And you write that our sentimentality lead us astray about homosexuality. How do we write the course? How do you intend to write the course?
Well, I want to propose a different narrative. You know, we are called to be a sign of contradiction in the world, right? And I'm always inspired by that story in the Gospel of Mark with John the Baptist and Herod. And, of course, John the Baptist was convicting Herod of the goodness of chastity, because Herod was living in his own unchaste way of living. But there's an interesting line that the Gospel of Mark says. It says, Herod didn't like what he said, but he was perplexed and intrigued by what he said. He was fascinated by what John the Baptist said, even though it was convicting of him. And I think if we promote the church's teaching in a winsome way, and in a way that says, wait a minute, have you considered this other path? I think we can slowly win back hearts, because everyone in this world is so desperately confused about human sexuality, and I think we've been intimidated into fear of talking about it. So part of the reason I wrote this book is to help that conversation, to help win souls. But to get to the core of your question, how do we challenge the sentimentality? We have to be really convinced in our own lives that the virtue of chastity is part of the good news of the gospel. And to believe that when we meet a person who identifies as gay, to say, you know what? The world vision seems to bring you happiness, but really the path for happiness and peace is to follow the ways laid out by Christ and his church. And that's only going to happen when we're in relationship with people and we witness to the virtue and the goodness of virtue, the virtue of chastity in our own lives.
Yeah, Daniel, you make a really important point about the dissonance and the growing affirmation, as you put it, of the value of life in the womb versus acceptance of same-sex relationships. And you've just hit on another word, too, of chastity. Is there a kind of deliberate campaign to indoctrinate young people to embrace a lack of chastity for all sorts of social reengineering?
Well, yeah, you know, I think our young people are being indoctrinated and propagandized. And in my book, I include a handout that is given to students all over the country. It's called the Genderbread Person. And what it is, it's this kind of cartoon character that supposedly talks about sexual identity, and students are giving this and say, well, on this grid, mark how you feel today. Who are you sexually attracted to? Mm-hmm. Men or women? Both? Somewhere in the middle? How do you feel today? Do you feel like more like a boy or a girl? And then it says, well, these feelings can change. And it's a wonderful, it's just this wonderful gift, your human sexuality. And so this is really a form of indoctrination to our children. And, you know, the sexual revolution has really come full circle. And we're trying to tell our students that really the only morality that matters is whether or not you are engaging in something where both people are consenting and you're supposedly having, quote unquote, safer sex, where the safety issue is just regarding a sexually transmitted disease. But, of course, we are a unity of body and soul. And when we come together with one flesh, that rips apart our souls. And so I'm really burdened for young people, particularly in this realm of sexual identity. Since I was in the Diocese of Pittsburgh speaking to a group one time about this, and a young man put an anonymous question. He said, if I feel attracted to the same sex, does it mean I'm gay? Well, many young people go through a period mm-hmm. in adolescence where they have attractions to the same sex. And based on what the world says to them, as soon as you are attracted to the same sex or even have a passing thought about it, that means whatever it means is that you're not straight. Maybe you're gay at the at the very least, you're bisexual. This really does injury to students,
sure.
I think, and we have to really fight for that virtue of chastity to be recovered.
Would you say the primary audience of your book is are young people?
No. I've written a book for anyone that is. Ideally, I wrote it for myself when I was maybe 20 or 25. Mm-hmm. The kind of book I would have liked to read. But I have some sections on there where I talk about the sections on the catechism that are difficult, like the questions of disordered. How do we make sense that when the catechism says that the homosexual inclination is objectively disordered, how do we make sense of that being loving? I think that applies to anyone in the pew who wants to know how to love people. I have a section in there on the wisdom of the saints on fighting for chastity. I think I intended that to really help anyone who is struggling with the virtue of chastity in their lives. It's a great gift we have of the saints, so many of them who struggled with chastity like St. Augustine did. But I also have a chapter in there called The Gift of Loneliness, and mm-hmm. I hope that chapter can reach out to anyone. I've thought about widows or widowers that may have lost their spouse and want to know, well, how do I make sense of this cross of loneliness that I have? So I wrote it, for me as a young man, but I'm hoping to reach a lot of different folks in their own need. I really think the book is ultimately a book about redemptive suffering.
Sure.
That was one of the guiding principles as I wrote that book. So my particular story, I think there's a universality there.
I hope many people will take it up and read it. I haven't yet gotten my hands on a copy, but I look forward to doing so. And I know Judy Roberts, one of our authors at the Register, is going to be interviewing you. So there will be more in print and online of an opportunity to hear about your book and your perspective. I have one more question for us, and you know that we have been discussing Father James Martin in the Register's pages, his mm-hmm. book, Building Bridges. And this is an approach that he proposes that the Church should take for reaching out to those who are same-sex attracted, the LGBT community, he calls. Calls for a bridge to be built, but he seems to think that the Church has a ways to go to actually reach that community, and it's really the Church's part to reach the institutional Church has to reach out further. You have said some things that just seem to fly in the face of that. Really, I mean, you've said that the community needs to embrace, and that someone with same-sex attraction really needs to embrace what the hierarchy has said. And it seems to me there's a disconnect there, that many people find what the hierarchy says troubling, if you will. How did you overcome that? I mean, that seems, at least from what Father James Martin says, a big void to try to overcome a sense that the hierarchy has hurt me.
Well, you know, that's like saying that a doctor who says to me, Dan, you need to lose 50 pounds because you're not living the way you want to live your life, the way you should live your life to be healthy, is being cruel.
Mm-hmm.
I write about that in the book. I'm a big man, and the doctor has said, you know what, based on medical evaluations, Dan, you are clinically obese. Well, I prefer big boned or pork, something like that. But the fact of the matter is the doctor, we call Christ the great physician, right? And he's the great physician of our souls. And so we have to look at when people look at the Church's teaching, especially the ones that impact their lives most clearly and most convicted in their own lives, when they feel hurt, it could be because they don't like the pain of the surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
This is the case with the LGBT community. When they clamor against the Church and they say, you are not loving us and welcoming us and that sort of thing, what they really want is they want a Church that doesn't love them very much.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't realize that. And that's the bridge. That's the bridge that Father Martin is building. It's not a bridge of love. It's a bridge of sentimentality. Because Christ himself, with a woman caught in adultery, we can look at that with all sexual issues. What did he say? I don't condemn you. Well, that's welcome, and that's communion. That's bridge building right there. That's dialogue. But the dialogue is never complete with Christ or with the church until we hear those words of Christ that were said with so much love to the woman caught in adultery. Now go and sin no more.
Right.
That's my doctor saying, hey, get your bike out. Stop eating French
bacon.
Pie. Bacon, yeah, exactly. But I could choose to say, you know, doctor, you do not love me. But the doctor sees the way things really are and says, I want you to flourish. And that's the great physician there. So Father Martin, he doesn't ever talk about the goodness of chastity in his book. And I think, well, what kind of, you're building a bridge that won't lead anybody anywhere. And one of the things I write in my book is fundamental to my journey has been the virtue of humility.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is I did not create myself. I did not create my sexuality. I didn't create my sexual identity. I don't have the right to rename or define my sexual identity. God did that when he made us male and female. And if I want to flourish, I'm going to humble myself to God's vision for humanity and what the church has said about me. Now, that's hard. And I'll tell you what, it took a lot of painful suffering. I was the prodigal son. But we don't do people any good service to just give them a hug and say, you're welcome into our church without saying what Christ said. Now go and sin no more. That's a true invitation to a fuller life. And so I'm very troubled by Father Martin's kind of sentimental view of Christianity. It's not a bridge that I want to have anything to do with.
Yeah. Well, Dan, I'm humbled just to listen to the way you talk. I think those the people I know who have same-sex attraction do suffer loneliness. They do suffer a lot. And I love them as best as I can. And I know they need to hear your message because it's a message of truth. It's a message of love. It's a message of your own experience. And you can really offer quite a bit to them. So thank you so much for being courageous in sharing this message. And we look forward to covering your book more at the Register. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on. God bless you.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.